What's going on, everybody?
Yo.
We're back again, episode 15 of Read Between the Lines. I'm your boy, Daniel.
This is your boy, Q.
Yeah, we're here again. So, Mr. Q, how are you today?
Actually, I'm pretty good today.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Ready slow for motion. The weekend?
Yeah. I mean, I have to work, but I'm still...
This weekend?
You know. Oh, you know, man. We sometimes weekends, it's like a weekday sometimes. So, which is okay.
Okay.
It's all right. I'm not complaining.
Gotcha. Well, we got a few stories that we came across over this week. And actually, you know, this week, the Democratic National Convention is going on as we speak. Today is Thursday, and I think today... Kamala Harris is going to accept officially the nomination as the presidential candidate on the Democratic side. But the DNC has been going on all week. It started on Monday. It culminates tonight, her taking the nomination. But so there's been a lot of different speakers at the convention. You know, big wigs like Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama spoke, Steve Kerr, you know, other,
Oprah Winfrey, wasn't it?
What's that?
When Oprah Winfrey, yeah.
Oprah Winfrey spoke too, and some other people. One person in particular that also spoke was Michelle Obama, and I think you sent me a clip, of the speech. Now, I don't know how much of the speech you listened to. It was about a 20-minute speech.
Right.
So
I didn't listen to all of it.
You didn't listen to all of it?
No.
So, well, let me ask you this before I give you my take. What you think of this speech? And actually, what do you think about the convention as a whole? But more importantly, the speech, since you sent it to me, and you know, what was your take on it?
I just thought it was a nice comeback. I like how Michelle, she responded about the black jobs.
Okay.
I thought that was kind of hilarious. And she just spoke her truth, and she, you know, she heard represent, you know, that's about it. You know, I didn't watch the whole thing. I just saw the clip that went viral. So,
the one about the black jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a nice little line. I'll give her that. I mean, it was a nice little line. And I mean, she, you know, she has some other things that she said on there, but I was curious, you know, she was the last, well, not the last, but she was one of the former first ladies. Mm-hmm. So when you sent me that clip, I was like, you know what, let me take a listen to see what she's got to say. So I took a listen to the whole 20 minutes, and she has some jabs in there. And you know, she gave, in the beginning of the speech, she kind of gave pay homage to her mom and how her mom raised her and everything, her parents for that matter. And then she went on to say some other things. The speech to me, it was okay at best when I listened to it. In fact, I had to... I wrote down a couple of things that I saw in the speech.
You wrote down what you saw?
No, I wrote down some of the things that she said.
Okay.
That she said. And that I wanted to kind of touch base on. Let me see where I wrote it at. Okay. So, all right. So this is part of her speech, and I quote, "Every single day of her life," talking about her mom, "she believed that all children, all the people, have value, that anyone can succeed if given the opportunity. She and my father didn't aspire to be wealthy. In fact, they were suspicious of folks who took more than what they need." And I thought that was a very interesting, you know, quote of hers, Because on the one hand, you know, she's saying a very true thing when she says that her parents instilled in her the values of that anyone can succeed if given the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And they never wanted to be wealthy. In fact, they were suspicious of folks who took more than they needed. And my takeaway from that was like, well, should we be suspicious of you, Michelle? Because let's think about it for a second. Between her and Obama, they're worth between 70 and like $130 million combined. Okay. They have a $11 million Martha Stewart estate. It's about 30 acres. Mm-hmm. And then they have another $8 million house in DC. And they've accumulated all this wealth, and by all means, I don't fault them at all. In fact, I'm glad for them that they were able to make that kind of money outside the White House after they left. Mm-hmm. But this idea that she's making it sound like folks that have money, you gotta be wary of them, because they have more. You have more. I mean, not just that, but when I look back and I saw where her money come from, like all her wealth, her and Barack Obama, the former president, it didn't come from starting a business. It didn't come from employing people. It really didn't come from anything that was tangible that you can say they contributed to the economy. No. The majority of their wealth, believe it or not, one came from book deals that they got. The other one came from a Netflix partnership. And the other major part of their wealth came from speaking engagements. I don't know if you knew this, but Michelle gets about $200,000 to $300,000 every time she gives a speech. So, you know, the idea that folks should be suspicious of those that take more than what they need, I thought that was kind of a weird jab at sort of quote unquote rich people when you're rich. So are we supposed to be suspicious of you because you got a lot of money? So I thought that was kind of disingenuous in her part. And then I took issue with later on in the speech. And I'm going to quote what she goes on to say. She says, she, talking about Kamala, understands that most of us will never be afforded the grace of failing forward. We will never benefit from affirmative action of generational wealth. If we bankrupt a business or choke in a crisis, we don't get a second, third, or fourth chance. We don't get to change the rules so we can always win. And again, I was like, she keeps talking about we and us. I'm like, Michelle, you're not one of us. You're not out here making $50,000 a year, trying to make it, you know, paycheck to paycheck. What are you talking about, you know, not being able to afford generational wealth? And she's saying that Kamala understands that most people are not going to be afforded that. Yes, most people are not going to be afforded that. But you're not one of them. So when she kept saying we and us, I'm like, you ain't in that conversation. So again, I just felt like it was kind of a bit disingenuous when she does not belong in the class of people that she's referring to. But when she goes on to say, and I thought was, you know, really interesting later on in her speech, she talked about something about we don't whine or cheat our way ahead. And I was like, okay, yeah, that will be believable if it wasn't for the fact that they pushed Biden out. I mean, they just straight up pushed him out. I mean, the guy didn't want to drop out, but they pretty much pushed him out and put Kamala in, who didn't garnish a single vote from anybody. So when I saw her speech, rather, I was a bit taken back because I was just like, I really don't know how can she say some of the things that she's saying. Now, for the record, you know, whether you're Democrat or Republican or independent, it really doesn't matter to me. But at the end of the day, you have to realize that the government ain't coming to save you. I mean, I don't care what they say. They're not coming to save you. You got to save yourself. At the end of the day, the government, it's not their job to give you a ladder of success. That's up to you. And the fact that, because they do it on both sides, really, pander to make us depend on them, depend on the government. I'm like, no, I depend on God and I depend on my own abilities and let the chips fall where they may. So that's was kind of like my take on it when I listened to it in its whole entirety of 20 minutes. I had issues with other things, but obviously, this is only like an hour podcast, so I wasn't going to try to go into the whole thing. But, I just feel like there's a lot of joy and vibes going on, and that's cool. But I'm going to need a little bit more substance. And so far, I don't feel like we've gotten that from the Democratic Party. But I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on anything?
Honestly, no, I don't.
How can you not?
Politics is, when you get into talk about the president, it gets very sticky. Like, it roughs a lot of feathers and people got their beliefs and, what they think and everybody has an opinion, So at the end of the day, it is what it is. Like you just said, it doesn't matter what president. My faith is in Jesus Christ. So, like you said earlier, the government's not going to save you. You got to save yourself. You got to believe that God's going to work away and believe in him that you're going to make it regardless of what president you have. So, it's just, there's pros and cons. It doesn't matter who's on that stand. It could be anybody from Martin Luther King. It could be anybody. It's always going to be somebody going to have something to say. Somebody's not going to like it and somebody will. The person who don't like it, next person will. So if she would have said, if she reworded a different way of her thought, her words, it'd have been somebody had to come about that part. So it's a no-win situation. Yeah. So I think they know that, you got some people feel the way you feel. Then you got some people feel the way they feel about Biden, Trump. You just ain't going to win. People always going to find something or some fault in anything and make some out of it. So,
You're not gonna agree on everything,
right?
And my thing is, vote your interest.
You know?
Whatever your interest is, that's what you should vote for.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anyone should be faulted for who they choose to vote,
right? But they do.
Whether it's on the right or on the left, because at the end of the day, we're all voting our interests, whether mm-hmm. it's our pocketbooks with the economy, whether it's what's going on in the border, whether it's some of this social issues mm-hmm. like abortion and other things of that right. nature. So you vote your interest at the end of the day, and don't let nobody try to shame you into thinking otherwise.
Right.
It was so funny because I mean, I was having a conversation with someone, and I was trying to tell them that this whole open border situation is a bit of a mess, to say the least. And, you know, they're saying, oh, we got to put, you know, country first, country over party. And you know, they're voting for Kamala. And I'm thinking, country over party, okay. But how can you say that when you have, for example, people in Illinois, where the state has spent over like $2 billion in illegal migrants? Where was that money, that $2 billion, for the local residents and people that have been suffering, you know, in Chicago for years, in the Black community, in the Hispanic community, in other communities in Chicago? But somehow they came up with $2 billion for illegal immigrants. Same thing in New York. Same thing in California, Colorado, Oregon. All these places where they're considered sanctuary cities. Mm-hmm. And that's the point. That's basically what I said. And you know what I was told? I was told that I should watch my tone, because I was coming across as kind of racist towards immigrants. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm an immigrant. I came here as an immigrant. And you're telling me that I can't speak on it? I came here as an immigrant, and I came here illegally. You know, my dad put in the dues and did all the paperwork and got us here. And I am thankful for being here and all the opportunities that I've been granted to come here. But the audacity for someone to tell me that because I choose not to believe everything the Democratic Party is telling me, and I choose not to kowtow to all the things I've been saying all these years, and I choose to think differently for a change, all of a sudden I'm a racist. I'm against my own self. And like, I'm supposed to be a quote-unquote sellout. And I don't know how you vote. You know, we never really had that conversation.
Right.
But it kind of felt to me like when Black people that vote for Republicans, when they get called Uncle Toms, bootlickers, coons, because they don't follow the narrative. So, and that's the problem that I have with people that, you know, tend to be liberals, because it's like the second you don't agree with the majority of whatever everyone wants you to believe, quote unquote, all of a sudden you're a sellout. Oh, you're sounding racist. Really? I can't have my own mind. I can't make up, you know, my own decisions and think differently than you or anybody else. So, you know, so it was kind of weird, because it came from someone that I was like literally not expecting it. But I was like, wow, that just shows me how sometimes people can be all about feelings over facts, and just when they don't really have a good argument, they're like, well, okay, well, you must be a racist. Now, I don't know if you've experienced anything like that or you've seen other people, but I was kind of taken back when that happened, and that was this week, and I was like, wow.
You need a hug. You need a hug.
Nah, I'll be fine. But
I know at work, like, I work for a German company, and it's all cultural. It's everything from, you name it, it works there. So sometimes a lot of comments, you have to be careful. If you want to get to HR, that's the quickest way. Talk about politics. Talk about racism. Talk about immigrant. Anything. If the person feel offended, like you could just, like you just said, make some very slight comment, And if they feel offended, they go into HR, and then you have to go to HR regardless.
Well, I don't think that's – I don't think the workplace is the place to be having those kind of discussions anyway.
Well
– But, you know, if you want to have them in the privacy of your own home with some friends –
Well, that's different.
And, well, that's what I'm talking about. Like, I was having a conversation with someone that I've known, you know, pretty much, you know, all my life just about. And the idea that as long as they've known me and the things that I stood for, not because I'm going against the grain or because I'm not willing to go the same way that I was always told to go, all of a sudden I'm sounding like a racist. That makes no sense to me. Now, I agree. You probably shouldn't be talking about that kind of stuff at work because it's just, yeah, you're going to, you know, ruffle some feathers and you don't want to mess that up in the workplace when you got to see people every day. But the idea that you can't have open conversations with whether it's friends or even people in your family.
I mean, I even heard the conversations get heated, not just in the workplace. I've heard it in the barbershop. I've heard it people in restaurants. No, I've heard it even at the mall, like when you in line at the shopping store and you're shopping or something and they see a comment on the TV.
Yeah.
And they make a comment out loud. They're thinking out loud and they say something and the person in front of them will turn around and look at them. And they didn't have to say nothing. It just the look in their face said everything. And then the person should have been quiet. And then they retaliate. They say something else on top of that. And then they turn around. And then the person who turned around the first time didn't say nothing. It's like a warning. Like, okay, all right now. And then they responded because the person who made the comment the first time says something else because the person in front gave him this look, and then it started it. That's all it took. And it just, like you said, everybody should be entitled to their own opinion. You know, where you feel is where you feel. You know, like you said, if you stand up and believe what you stand up and believe in, then that's you. That's it.
And there's not a problem with disagreeing, especially if you're being respectful and you're actually bringing facts to the table.
Right.
You know, if you're bringing facts to the table and you're bringing numbers and you're talking about actual scenarios and things that have happened, you can give mm-hmm. examples. That's one healthy debate that, you know, I welcome with anybody. And I don't claim to know it all, so I definitely welcome that, and I try to be as educated as I can. But the problem that I have is when people don't have a good argument or they just want to disagree because, again, they don't have nothing to really back up what they're saying, and they resort to name-calling because that's the only thing they can come up with to sort of argue your argument. Basically, what you're trying to say is, oh, well, you must be a sellout. Well, you must be, you know, self-hating. And I'm like, really? Like, just because I don't agree with you, but at the same time, when I'm telling you, I'm giving you numbers and facts, you can't give me nothing back. And that's where I think was kind of disappointing in this individual. But it is what it is. It just lets me know that whenever I talk to someone about certain things, I need to know what I'm talking about. And that person hopefully knows what they're talking about. Otherwise, you're going to look stupid trying to call people names because you have nothing else to argue or to defend your position with. So anyways, that's my take on all that.
The moral of the story is don't write a check that your butt can't cash.
Facts. So anyways.
Thank you.
Moving on. So we got the story. So it was kind of here in the news this week as well. So apparently Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez are officially divorcing. So let me read this. So Jennifer Lopez has filed for divorce from Ben Affleck just over 2 years after their marriage and rekindling their relationship. Some of the fans speculate that Affleck's discomfort with the public exposure of their personal lives, especially highlighting how Lopez's February 2024 documentary contributed to their split. In the documentary, Affleck expresses how he's very uneasy with Lopez sharing their private love letters and their personal lives publicly. They're differing boundaries regarding privacy and media attention, which also caused their 2004 breakup. This seems to have resurfaced, leading to their current separation. So basically, you know, what the article was saying is that Ben Affleck wasn't very cool with her putting everything out on social media and everything like that. And there was a situation where she was like recording some music, and all these love letters that apparently he had written to her, she shared it with all the musicians and the producers for them to read, I guess, to get some inspiration for music. But Ben Affleck was like, wait a minute, like, that's not supposed to be private, like, between me and you. Why are you sharing it to the world? So obviously he felt some type of way about her putting everything on social media and sharing all their privacy with everybody else. Her, on the other hand, was like, well, you know, it is what it is. You knew how I was. You know, I'm a celebrity. I'm an actress. I'm a singer. So I got to put my stuff out there, you know, and you're supposed to be cool with it. And I think that's where a lot of the friction started happening, and that's what some people are alluding to. But anyways, what do you think about that?
Man, whatever, J-Lo. Whatever. I feel like it's probably more to the story. I don't blame Ben Affleck. You know, if I write a story, if I write some love letters that are personal to my spouse, and you go take them without my consent, and you take it and give it to these people to get me more material for music, that's not fair. Like, no, this is between me and you. This is something I wrote, and when I'm vulnerable, or something that was romantic for us, and they're going to take it and say, oh, this will be a good one, and hopefully this will help my career.
And the producers and everything, they used to call him Pan Affleck.
Yeah, no, I've heard about that, but I don't think that she should have done that. If he was not okay with it, then she should respect his wishes and say, okay, we won't do it. We'll find another route. We'll find a different option, or better yet, let's compromise. Out of all the letters that you gave me, give me a couple that you would not mind that I can use in some music and maybe reword it into a different way, a different sound, you know, something like that. But just don't take all of them or the majority of them, you know, and let the whole world hear, because at that moment, this is something that I written for you, for us, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of embarrassing too.
And it is kind of embarrassing. Yes, it is. And to me, this shows the character of her. Yeah. Again, this lady, Lord J Lo, she's gonna live up to her name. She's going up being low, because she can. It's always something with her. Like, I remember her being engaged to like several guys and getting these nice rings, and then end up breaking engagement off.
So, why do you think Ben went to her for a second time around?
To be honest, I really think Ben Affleck really genuinely care and love J-Lo. I really think he does. And I really think that he has feelings and he understand her, where other guys don't. You know, I do, because he's self-worth too. Like, he don't need nothing. I mean, he got his own money, you know, so he's not into the fame. Like, he doesn't really care about dressing up and being on the red carpet. He can care less. You know, you can see how he carry himself. He just chill, lay back dude.
Yeah.
Made a couple meals, a couple movies, got a hot wife, you know, get a couple drinks. He's good to go.
Well, speaking of money, word on the street is that they didn't have a prenup.
I did hear that.
And I mean, he's worth about $150 million.
Yeah, easy.
And she's worth about $400 million.
Right.
So they were married for about 2 years, and there was no prenup. Do you think, because she makes more, do you think he's entitled to half of her wealth?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
Why not?
I don't think he need it.
Is that about need?
Yeah, I don't. He's.
But do you think he deserves it?
No.
He was married to her.
For 2 years.
And there was no prenup.
24 months.
Yeah.
That ain't nothing.
So you don't think he should get nothing?
Nah. Because okay. She probably don't have nothing no way.
She's worth $400 million is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I don't think he need anything from. I don't think he wants anything from her. I think he's already set. He's good to go. 2 years. She now, give or take, she built hers. She deserve it. I mean, I could see if it'd been married for like 10, 15 years. They produced a couple movies together, had a couple more kids, you know, a lot of real estate. Then that's a different story. But 2 years, you know, half of the time they was fighting. I mean, there were so many different clips going around on social media when they had different like award shows and how he would look so uninterested. Like he would have this look at his face and she would always have this fake smile because she knew the cameras was on her. But when she turned away from the cameras, like she would give him the business, you know, and then she turned back around and get this fake smile. Like I know the camera's on me, you know? So, and I feel like he was over it, man. I think at this point, Ben Affleck, you know, he doesn't really care about the prenup. You know, he got his own money. He can just come down maybe to the Hiltons or something, just chill out, you know, just live a normal life, you know, and he'd be fine. She wants to be, stay relevant and be in a red carpet, being at award shows, new perfume, new movie, new producer, new show, this and that. You know, she's trying her best to stay in that limelight, stay relevant and keep her name on everybody's mouth. But I think she could, and I think she can, but I think at this point, I think she needed to just chill and let it be, you know, people are always going to remember you, who you are. But you don't have to force it down people's throat, you know?
Well, just to clarify, I agree. I don't think he deserves half of her stuff.
No.
I think they should just leave with what they can.
Right.
But I would say the same thing if it was the other way around.
Right.
If he was worth $400 million and she only had $150, she shouldn't get nothing of his.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know that some people would want to have issues with that, no. But that's the way it should be.
24 months, brother.
Anyways, well, speaking of relationships, let me look at here. So some of you guys may be trying to go get into a relationship, maybe go on a first date. And I thought it was interesting, based on some research, do you know how much the average first date is?
In 2024?
Yeah.
The average date.
Like, amount, what's the average that they're spending, that most people spend on average on a first date? Any idea?
Probably 150.
No, actually, the average person spends about $91 on the first date here in the U.S. And men tend to spend more than women on dates, especially on the first dates. But the cost can vary by location, like cities like New York, San Francisco, you might see a little bit higher. And let's see. And actually, younger people tend to spend less, around $60 to $70 per date, while older daters, they tend to invest a little bit more on the first date. So I guess my question to you, I mean, you're still single. Yeah. You're still out here in these streets.
Mm-hmm.
How much would you spend on a date, on a first date with the nice young woman that you like and trying to, you know, court or whatever, like get to know on a serious level? How much would you spend?
I would spend.
Now, Greg, think about this. It's the first date. So this don't guarantee there'll be a second or that she's even going to like you. So go ahead.
I say no more than 200.
No more than 200.
Yeah.
Damn, you balling, bro.
Well, like you just said, if it's somebody who I care about and I wanted to be like potential and I wanted to go somewhere and I already feel like I wanted to and I wanted to invest in it, then yeah, I would spend my 200. Because if you think about it, that's really 200 is kind of like, that might be borderline these days.
You know, what?
That might be borderline because, you know, with the price of everything is going up. I mean, which you can do a lot with 200 bucks. Don't get me wrong. You can really, really. And to be honest, I don't really think it's about the price. It's about their creativity. I think you can go somewhere real nice and make it and be in the right place, the right time, the right scenery. You know, and it might even be 200. It might only cost you $125, but you happen to be at the right place. That's the right type of music, good conversation, and you just build on that, you know, because you can go to a nice, big, huge restaurant or not even a restaurant and it cost you $300. It could be everything you want it to be, but there's no conversation. It's like dead. Like you're just sitting there like the wrong type of music in the background is playing, or it's raining, or, you know, there's traffic, there's a big 18-wheeler parked in front of your view. Can't see. Then also it's horrible.
Yeah.
But if you do it right and you don't have to go to no 5-star resort, you know, anytime like a nice restaurant, you can go somewhere, you know, and be real. Like, don't break your bank just to impress somebody, but just be real. Like you said a couple weeks ago, you know, you can set the bar so high. You know, like if we go on the first date and I care about you and I love you and I want to get to know you. And it may set me back for like $175, $200. And the next day we go out, it might not be the $200 date, you know?
Yeah. I know. Me and Fran, we went to Tupelo Honey.
Yeah.
On our quote unquote, you know, first date.
I think that's a good spot.
But that cost me less than $100.
Yeah, right.
You know? So when you said 200, I'm thinking like Chop House 47 or one of those. And I'm like, bro, I ain't doing all that. Not first date. Now, no. To be honest, and even though, I mean, I had really, in my mind, I was having like serious intentions, you know, about wanting to be with friends. So I wanted to be something, you know, decent, but nothing like crazy either.
Right.
But I don't know if you remember, this might have been like a year ago when that girl went viral talking about, you know, she like videotaped the guy taking her to the Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah.
And she made this huge deal about it.
She's probably still single today.
And she probably still is. But my thing is like, what's wrong with the Cheesecake Factory? Like, I mean, they have a lot of options there. Not to mention all the cheesecakes. So I feel like you shouldn't have to break the bank. I mean, less than $100 is completely doable.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And if she really likes you, like, even if you just take her for, like, coffee and a walk in the park, if she's really into you, she's not really going to care about that kind of stuff. So even though, you know, people are spending, you know, close to $100, which sounds about right when you ask me. Some people can definitely go overboard, and that's a quick way to get broke.
Right. And we don't have time for that.
No, we don't. So kind of keeping it in the whole sort of, you know, relationships and whatnot. I came across this story. And basically about a man facing backlash after his ex-wife's sister asked him out on a date. So a 28-year-old man shared his dilemma on Reddit after unexpectedly being asked out by his ex-wife's 24-year-old sister, Riley. Their chance encounter led to mixed feelings, and he grappled with concerns about potential family drama and the complexity of dating someone from his ex's family. Reddit users criticized him for considering the date, accusing him of thinking with his, you know what, And eventually, he decided to turn down the date, acknowledging his unresolved emotional issues and seeking professional help. So, Q, my question to you is, if you were married or you had an ex-girlfriend, you guys were not together for several years, and you came across her sister, and she asked you on a date, would you go out with her? With your ex's sister?
After I came across her after several years?
Yeah, kind of like him. She hadn't seen the girl in several years because he moved out of town.
Right.
He came back to town and just happened to run into her shopping. And they were kind of catching up. And then the ex's sister said, hey, you know, would you like to get a drink with me sometime? And he was like, he got her number, but then he was kind of torn whether he should or not. So in that kind of scenario, would you do it? Man, I'm surprised you got to think about this.
No, it's not that I had to think about it. And I mean, I'm just looking at the consequences behind it. Like, there's holiday dinner. There's stuff family. You're going to run into her at the dinner, at the table. How her mom's going to feel about you dating her, this other daughter, right. Her brother. You know, so whether his kids going to be involved, I mean, I don't know anything about that. But
well, they didn't have any kids. And apparently, it was a mutual separation. And he left in good terms with her family. Like, there was no ill will. But he got along with them, which kind of makes sense given that the sister is now trying to, you know, hook up with him. But, you know, he was like, in the end, he was like, nah, I guess.
Well, honestly, I don't think anything wrong with it.
You don't think nothing wrong with it?
No. Because now you tell me the whole story. He left. It was a mutual separation.
Yeah.
You know, he left in good terms with the family. So they know he's a good guy. Yeah. Because his character, because he left in good terms.
Yeah.
Otherwise, his sister, where the ex-sister must know or must seen something in him. Say, you know what? You guys broke off easy. You know, you got along with the family. So
now the ex-wife, she's remarried apparently and happy or whatnot.
Oh, so, yeah. Yeah, I would go for it. Because if she's now you see, now I'm hearing the whole full story. Now, if she's remarried and moved on to her life and she's happily married, and then the family accept me, and why not, you know?
I don't know, man. To me, that's too messy. Because of
it
what
could
you,
be messy.
Because of what you said, like the family gatherings. And,
that's true.
And Thanksgiving and
but
Christmas.
But it sounds like this guy has character, and it sounds like to me that he cared about his name. So he wants to leave. He's probably the guy who puts in a whole month before he resigned from his job. Most people do 2 weeks. He probably do a whole month. So in other words, he's trying to do things the right way. So he's trying to walk away with good blood instead of bad blood. So I feel like to me, based on what you're telling me, that he's going to win regardless, because his wife is happy with somebody else. She's married. She's moved on. It's been a couple of years. So the sister sees something in me, went out for drinks. The family actually kind of still like me. So guess what? I'm still coming to the party.
So you're cool with dating your ex's sister?
It's not that I'm cool with it. If there's a situation where it's end of like his, maybe so. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it has to be right. We can't break up and be bad blood and I feel a vibe off from the family. Like, then it's off. Now, if the whole family don't accept me and we kind of walked away in bad terms, no. But if we walk in with good terms and the family we still cool, they still send me birthday wishes on my birthday.
Probably not, but.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying if all this all take place, then yeah.
Yeah. Nah, it'll be a no for me. I've been in not that situation in and of itself, but I've been in similar situations where I started dating someone in particular, and come to find out, they were like really good friends with someone else that I had dated. And once I found out that they were friends and they would actually hang out from time to time, I pretty much cut it off. I was like, nah, I ain't doing it, because I didn't want to be in awkward situations where, do you need to get that? Okay. I didn't want to be in awkward situations where, I have to be like, you know, act kind of fake or weird or just feel uncomfortable.
All right.
So for me, there's too many people. There's so many fish in the sea for me to put myself in situations where I may potentially feel awkward.
Right.
But that's just me. Yeah. If you want to roll the dice, go ahead, bro.
Yeah. But like I said, if it's in good blood and good terms, then yeah, I wouldn't mind.
Okay. So, all right. All right. So let's see what else we got. Man, I saw this crazy story, man. I wanted to see what you thought about this. So
so many crazy stories, y'all. He got too much time on his hand.
Oh man, this Kentucky man faked his death.
Oh my god!
To avoid child support, can you believe that? So, a Kentucky man was sentenced to 6 years in federal prison after he faked his own death to evade paying over $500,000 in child support. The man, Jacob Greer, went to extreme lengths to avoid his financial obligations, including fabricating his death and fleeing the country. After being caught, he faced legal consequences for his actions, including a hefty prison sentence for fraud and evasion. So, I mean, here's the thing. $500,000 is $500,000. I mean, that means you're behind for a while. And I looked at this guy's mugshot. I don't think he's probably has that good of a job to begin with. And for him to own $500,000, that's a lot of money. Now, I'm not saying it was okay for him to fake his own death, flee the country in order not to pay it. I'm not saying that's okay. What I am saying is I understand. That's just anyways, what do you think?
I don't even see how in the world he could understand that. I really don't. Because $500,000, he had to have several kids.
Probably.
He probably had at least have 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And so if you think about it, now if you think about it, if he had 5 kids, which somebody like him, not trying to judge, but typical, I would say he probably have at least 4 or 5 kids. They probably age between 7, 13, 14. So he's probably got back child support. And that's probably how it got to be almost $500,000.
That's crazy money, that is, though.
But, you know, nowadays it's not really a lot, because now when you got the average kid, child support is almost, depending on what you make hourly, it could be between $300 to $500 a child.
Yeah, I want to say they may take up to, what is it, like 30% of what you bring home?
Yeah. So if it's that much, 5 children, that's at least 2 or 3 years, maybe 4 years, him not paying. That's probably how I got to almost $500,000.
Yeah, so if you're not making that much money, or you're unemployed and you rack up $500,000, I mean, I ain't going to fault you if you're trying to like avoid prison by faking your death. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, if don't be a deadbeat dad, obviously take care of your kids. I'm not saying don't do it, because I feel like that's another conversation for another day. But I feel like that's the problem with a lot of things we got going on. We got a lot of deadbeat dads out there that are not taking care of their kids. But this guy, though, I mean, $500,000, bro, what are you doing? But my thing is, he faked the death, but then he had to leave the country, because obviously they can't see you walking around, you know, dead man walking. Like, seriously.
Yeah, he's been watching some movies.
So, yeah, he's
been watching some movies.
I wonder where they found him at. I never found out how they got to him. But, man, that goes to show you, bro, like, the government will get their money.
Right.
They're going to get their money one way or the other. So I don't care where you go. That's what I'm saying, man. That's crazy. Anyways, so let's see what we got. We got a little bit of time. So get what time it is.
Would you rather?
Is that time of the podcast where I was going to say that time of the day. Is that segment of the podcast we like to call Would You Rather? And I brought a couple. I don't know. Did you think of any?
I did not.
And come on, man. Yeah, one thing.
I did. I thought we were going to do like a throwback segment.
I mean, we could do a throwback segment.
Next Thursday.
Next week. But you got to tell me ahead of time. You got to give me some ideas or like.
You know, man, I'll be freestyle off the top of my head.
Well, I mean.
You know.
I mean, I can throw these out. We can just freestyle it.
No, just go ahead. Show me what you got on ink and paper.
Okay. All right. So, all right. So, would you rather live the rest of your life in a virtual reality simulation where all your dreams come true, but never see the real world again? Or stay in reality, but never achieve your deepest desires. In other words, do you want to stay in the Matrix, or do you, you know, take the red pill and get out of the Matrix? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know how these days they have like these like virtual reality games?
Yeah, I'm just thinking like.
And in the future, by the way, this might help you decide better. I don't know. In the future, virtual reality games are going to be so realistic. I mean, you're going to feel like you're there and like everything. They're going to have like stuff that we can touch and you're really going to feel like you're there. And what's going to be crazy is that some people are going to prefer to live in that world than their actual lives. So that's basically what it's asking. So
basically,
do you rather live in a virtual world
or a reality world?
Where anything you want to do, you can accomplish. Because it's virtual. Anything is possible.
No, I don't want to live in that world.
You rather live in the real world, but not necessarily accomplish some of the things that you would love to do.
Yeah. Okay.
Why, though?
Living in that fantasy world is not real. Like, it's a virtual reality, you know, and everything you dreamed of, you got right in your hand. It's like a perfect world. No, I don't want to live in that world. I'd rather live in the world where... why are you laughing at me?
I'm not laughing. I'm just thinking about what you're saying.
Yeah, because that's a world where everything is perfect and everybody's going to be. No, I don't want to live in that world.
Okay.
I want. Okay.
Because some people would say, what is reality? But just electrical impulses to the brain, if you think about it. So, who's to say this is real? Right here. Who's to say that it is?
It is real, Daniel. Don't play me.
So, okay. So you would live in the real world and just live with the consequences.
Yes.
Of like, maybe I don't get to do this or get to do that.
Yes. And I'm okay with that.
You're okay with that. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I agree. I'd rather live in the real than inside a virtual reality simulation. So basically, take me out of the Matrix.
But I ain't gonna lie, I have played a lot of the virtual reality games. They are funky.
You see what I'm saying?
They are so like it just it's almost scary.
Yeah, and wait till AI and all that gets really going.
That stuff's gonna mess some folks up.
I'm telling you,
and it's already probably doing it now. That's why I think a lot of these teenagers, these kids, are having a hard time trying to function in the real world. Because they feel they non-existent in reality, but they feel like they come alive in a four-wall room on this game. Like, prime example, my neighbor, I'm almost positive that he probably don't work his job no more, and all he does play video games.
He makes a living playing video games?
And I know guys at work right now makes good money playing video games.
That's crazy.
When I say good money, I'm talking about extra $5,000 or $10,000.
Wow.
Just playing video games. Actual leaving work early on vacation to go home to be on playing with some other partners and playing for hours. Like my neighbor, he plays for hours. I can go on TikTok right now, he's playing. And I know he's live because I can go on his TikTok again tomorrow. He'll have the same shirt on.
So why is he on TikTok if he's playing video games?
Because he's playing video and he's watching it live. And he's playing people and recording us at the same time.
Wow, that's crazy.
And
that's what he does for a living.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Man, what are we doing, man? What are we doing? Why are we waking up at 5:30, 4 o'clock in the morning? I mean, like.
There's another guy at my job. I don't know him personally, but he's a huge YouTuber.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. He does a lot of work on YouTube. And he's finally at the place now where he's about to make a decision to quit his job.
Really?
Yeah. Well, he's making almost $100K a year.
Dang.
And I've seen his house. And I know exactly where he live at. I remember him started doing this stuff years ago, back in like 2018.
Yeah.
And
but when you think about it, 2018, that's not that long.
No, it's not. It's not. You know, 18.
And what are we?
Six years.
So think about it. In 6 years from now, we're still podcasting. I mean, ain't no telling where we'll be. I mean, we could be.
Because he had to start somewhere. And now this cat got Corvettes. I know he got a Corvette. I know he got an Audi. And I know he got some kind of truck. That's all I know he got. But he got a real nice, beautiful home. And he's young. He's only like 36, 37.
Well, good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean.
People take this social media. And I really think once we had quarantine and once we had COVID, that really made people step up. For some and for some not, but for those who took advantage of that time and that all of that earned income money and stuff, they put it to work. You know, if you're gonna pay me $1,000 a month, or $1,000 a week to sit home, then I'm gonna use this money and build something. Yeah. I know when we were shut down at work, they was paying us $1,000 a week to sit home. And, we was out of work for almost 2 months. Wow. So you take that money, you know, that's pretty good. You know, you're not going anywhere. You can't buy another good thing with shut down quarantine. So you could take that money and do something with it. So, and I think a lot of these guys or girls, they did that and that come with OnlyFans, fans only. That comes with all these podcasts, these YouTube channels, bloggers. They're making bank.
Yeah, I mean, and I know that when you watch a lot of these videos and these creators and stuff like that, I mean, they make it look easy, but it's not. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. And granted, you get better as you go. I mean, trust me, we're trying to do something here, and it ain't easy. We're going through some, like, you know, trial and errors, and heck, we're still going through trial and errors right now. But what I appreciate about these people is the grind. They're willing to put in the work.
And they're consistent.
And consistent. That's what I'm going to say. That's really what it comes down to. And some people give up early. Some people, you know, stick it out and try to find their way. And for the ones that stick it out, they can make a living out of it. And it's so crazy that just a few years ago, you would never think of, like, making a living out of making, you know, videos and, like, you know, shorts and TikToks and reels. Yeah. And people are, like, literally taking it to the bank, bro. Not just from, like, the platforms themselves, like YouTube, who pays out, and TikTok that pays out, but when you're looking at all these affiliates and, like, people that businesses that want to do business with you and, like, sell their products. I mean, it's a whole world, and
it is.
And, like, but at the same time, it is a lot of work, and it's not something that you can just casually do. But
I think if it's something that you enjoy and that that you really, really, really love to do, you won't look at it as work. You know, you'll wake up the next morning and can't wait to do it because of something that you enjoy doing, and it feeds your spirit and it feeds your mind. It feeds your, you know, anything, your inner being that you don't mind. You can't get to do it. You're so excited to do it. So it's not even work. So it's easy. Like my man right beside me, he loved video games. You know, I'll never forget when we first moved over here and I met him. The first thing he said, he took a spare bedroom. He was going to change it into some type of, I don't know, like a bonus room and put up these walls and stuff in it. And I knew he was going to be a gamer. He said he was a gamer because he tried to invite me over. It ain't my thing. You know, I just can't sit in the room for hours. And the room is painted black. And you playing video games in these chairs and you ordering food, you ordering drinks, and you just in it all day. Him, he can do that because that's his passion.
Does he live by himself?
No, he got a wife and three kids.
Dang.
Yeah, and he stays in that room. I can go online right now. I guarantee you he would have on the same shirt he had on yesterday because he's been sitting there since yesterday. Now, he may take a break or something like that and go outside or get his, you know, trash can, what he got to do, but I guarantee if I go on TikTok the next hour, he's going to be sitting there playing the video games. And people be responding and talk back to him. Like we talking right now, but they be on live talking to each other.
Yeah.
So I just feel like once you find your glitch, that's something that you enjoy doing, it won't become work. So you can wake up the next morning and say, dang, today is a brand new day. I get to do this again. Yeah. Now, otherwise, like, we got to clock in. You know, we got like, oh, I got a job to do. Some people have a job. Some people got work, you know?
Yeah. Well, the thing about it is people always say, you know, follow your passion and whatnot. But to me, and other people have said this, so it's not like an original thought. It's not about following your passion. It's following something that you're good at. Because if you're not good at it in order to make money, then I don't care how passionate you are about it. You're not gonna make it. So you're better off doing something that you're good at and make your money. And once you got your money and you're kind of established, then follow your passion, then follow something that you might want to like dabble in or whatever on the side. And then if something comes up of it, then great. But don't leave your day job or don't, you know, put all your eggs on your passion, because most people's passions ain't going to make them any money.
That's true.
You got to do something that you're good at. And then hopefully, because you're good at it, you'll get compensated accordingly. And then you can follow some kind of passion work. So I got one more for you. Okay. Ready?
No.
So, would you rather be able to communicate with your future self, but be bound by the decisions you make now? Or be able to influence your past self, but never know how those changes will alter your present? So in other words, you could talk to your future self.
These are supposed to be fun.
And these are fun, man. It's supposed to be make you think.
Well, I'm so glad I don't have a computer right now. I'll be throwing tomatoes at you right now, but go ahead.
No, but
boom.
Man, come on now. But think about it. Like, If you had the chance to talk to your future self and be like,
right,
tell me what's happening or what I'm doing, but you couldn't change anything of what you're currently doing right now, or you could talk to your past self. You can talk to your 20-year-old self and say like, look, don't do this, don't do that. You know, do this, do that. But at the end of the day, you don't know what you end up doing that's going to affect your present life. Which one would you choose?
I would much rather talk to myself in the future.
Okay.
Because the past is the past.
But you can change the past by talking to your past self. You just don't know what's going to happen.
There's no point in changing the past because the past is in the past.
But in this hypothetical, you can say to your 20-year-old, you know, Q, you can go back and talk to 20-year-old Q and say, hey, Q, listen, if I was you, I would save some money, invest in Google, invest in Amazon or whatever, and trust me, it'll pay off. Put all as much money as you can put into these when they come out, and just wait. Put your money in these, and trust me, 10, 15 years afterwards, it's going to be worth a lot of money.
But it's part of the past. I mean,
but my point is that if you tell your 20-year-old self, hey, buy these stocks to make money, and let's say that you do when you're 20 years old or however long it's been when those things came out, that's going to change the whole trajectory of your life.
Yeah.
To the point that your current self is not going to be the current self, because chances are, who's to say that you even be living here in South Carolina? For all you know, with all that money you've made, you probably could say, oh, let's go somewhere else. You could have been, you wouldn't be living here. You might be somewhere else, maybe here, still here in South Carolina. Your friends will be probably different, the people that you hang out with, because your money's different. You'd be probably talking to more business people or, like, you know, investors and doing all kinds of things because you got a lot of money now. So it would completely change, potentially, how your life is if you talk to your old self and gave them some advice. Because, yes, you could make all that money, but who's to say at the same time you didn't become a drug addict? Or who's to say, you know, you got into some bad relationships and lost a lot of money because of the result of that? I mean, who knows? A lot of things could happen.
Right.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, just because.
So you're saying I could talk to myself in the past when I'm 20.
Right.
Give myself advice.
Yeah,
you could make better choices.
Potentially. But you don't know in the end what you're going to choose to do, which could change your current life. Maybe not, but it likely will if you're telling them to do something. Or you could talk to your future self and realize where you might be in the future, but dang, you can't do nothing about it right now.
I would love to.
See, I told you it was a good one.
Yeah, but it's stupid.
It's not stupid.
It is, with a capital S. But anyway, I would probably talk to my past self.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Why?
There's to make better decisions on a couple of things, and also to not to procrastinate on certain things that I could have done. Like you said, maybe to take some different business deals, which I could have done, but I didn't do it because I waited. And waited, and I just said, I don't think so. And also, take time to and give myself advice, don't take the business deal I thought would work, and it didn't work. You know? But, yeah. But really, and then as far as the future, but honestly, if I go back and look at my life when I was in my teens and 20s, I know I wouldn't be on drugs. Even if I gave myself advice on what I know now, then I still wouldn't be on drugs. I still wouldn't, because it's just not my thing.
Yeah.
I still wouldn't have a drinking problem. I know I still probably live in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's a lot wouldn't change, really, because I grew up in a way where I understood and I knew and I tried to make the best decision possible.
Yeah.
As we're growing up. But only thing that I would love to change if I could, back when I was 20, to actually build my relationship with my father. And I felt like I probably could have done that early years of my life, but I didn't do it because I felt like it didn't really matter. Because I was holding grudges because he wasn't there. You know, and I could have, you know, but I felt like I had chances to do something about it. But, you know, you 16, 17, 18, you thinking, oh, you tough. I don't need you no way. You never was there. So why come now? And I felt like if I would probably give myself advice on what I know now to that person back then, I probably could have saved my father. And he might be living today.
And that's why this would you rather is trying to figure out.
Right.
What, because to your point, if you told your past self that, I mean, obviously we don't know
right.
what you would have done with that advice, at least based on this scenario.
Right.
But there is a possibility that, yeah, you would have had a different relationship with, mm-hmm. with your dad.
I would have a relationship with him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I would, you know.
So for you, yes, like you would prefer that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because as far as anything else, I'm happy about, like, yeah. I believe stuff playing out the way it was because it was God's plan. Like, I do believe in prayer and believing in God and that God lead my way. And I do believe on some things, majority of all my things, that God led me to where I am today. You know,
yeah.
The only thing that really I could change or fix is a relationship with my father. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
You know? So I really, really, really wanted that and I didn't get it. So,
well, I would have agreed with you if it wasn't for the fact that I met Fran and obviously, I have a son now because I know that if I told my old self, hey, do this or do that differently or spend your money on this, spend your money on that, it would have completely changed the way I look at things and do things in that time frame.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't know that I would have met. I don't think that Fran would have came into my life. I don't think I would have had the son that I have now. If I told myself to do certain things back then differently,
mm-hmm.
it would change everything and I wouldn't have any of the things I have now, which you could argue, well, you wouldn't have known anyway. You could argue that, but because I know, because I have it, I don't want to change it. So for me, I would probably look into the future and talk to my future self and see, hey, what's going on? Where am I at? Obviously, the only thing that sucks is that I can't change anything that I'm doing now, which means that whatever happens is going to happen, and it is what it is. I got to live with it. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I guess I'll do that. I'll take the future. Oh, man. Well, that's the only... Man, if you don't like my would you rather, you need to bring your own, then. Because, I mean, I'm putting these things together, but if you
could
don't like
could y'all please, please, with a cherry on top, help us with these would you rathers. Give us some ideas. Leave it in the comments of, like, some good segments on would you rather. Because, obviously, this cat over here
is... Man, come on. I make you think, man. What's wrong with thinking?
You think he's a therapist or something. I don't know. No, I like it. It's cool.
But anyway, so I think that's all we got for this week. Thank you, everyone that's been following us through this journey. Make sure to tell all your friends and family, like, share, follow, and all the socials. Obviously, listen that's to right. us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and wherever you get your podcasts at. But yeah, do you have anything else for the people?
Be safe, enjoy yourself, live your life, and see you next time.
All right. See y'all later.
Deuces.